You're listening to Razza Riffs with Keith Razza and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. This is week 7 or 8 or whatever. I'm here with my trusty sidekick, Alan Lee.
Hello everyone. How's everyone doing?
This is interesting because usually we do like a opening remark and then we bring up the guest. But this guest, for those you don't know, is one of the coolest guys in the world.
Very special guest.
He used to be the main talent booker at the world famous comedy store. So Tommy Morris, guys. Say hi to Tommy.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Good to be here.
Yeah.
Great to have you.
This is fun. I didn't expect Tommy to.
No, we did not.
Yeah, this is like a little treat.
And living like in Sherman Oaks was helpful, too.
Yeah, I know.
A little close by.
Yeah, usually when I ask people if they want to do it, they're like, where is it? It's like Sherman Oaks. They're like, yeah, no thanks.
Like, a lot of people live here in Sherman Oaks.
Yeah, but the traffic.
Michael Chiklis lives like a couple streets behind where I do. I see him walking around taking a stroll.
Oh, does he?
It's right? A residential feel. I mean, keep in mind, it's south of the boulevard or north of the boulevard. North of the boulevard, yeah, you're the valley. South of the boulevard, it's on the other side of Beverly Hills.
That's oh, my God, we already have a phone call? Let's put on the headphones.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
That's, this is like 2 seconds. Hey, you're on the air. Who's this? Hello?
Hello, from Yangon, New Jersey.
What's this? Hello. All right.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was a great phone call.
That's one to put the headphones on.
Yeah, used to get those kind of phone calls late at night working in clubs. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of them.
Now, before you were at the comedy store, you worked in Florida at clubs. What'd you do there? You were
kind of a person, a little jack of all trades type thing.
Yeah.
I got out of college down in northern Florida, Jacksonville. Before I finished school, I did some touring theater for about a year, and although it was okay, I didn't like it. So I had one semester left at school, and then I started working in a nightclub.
Yeah.
And when I started working in a nightclub, because of being a musical theater type person, you have a lot of personality, maybe more than your typical person that's working in a nightclub.
Yeah, sure.
So I kind of got into doing their skits and all this type of stuff. And then later on, I booked bands, I did television commercials. I was like a big fish in a small pond in Jacksonville. It's the truth. I worked at the one club 2 years, a national chain called Confetti, and then I started working at a club called T-Birds. And people, comedians have mocked me out for that have known me for a long time, but I had a good time there. I was there 15 years. Maybe I shouldn't have been there that long, but I had like in my own little world I lived in.
Yeah,
you know, I worked the door some. I DJed happy hour. I picked up DJs. I made all the radio ads. I even started doing even more radio ads. So I went from doing radio ads for that club to ghostwriting for all these other clubs. And I was on TV. I hosted a thing called Club Access on Fox. It was on 5:30 to 6, 5 days a week. And this was my world in Jacksonville. And then I meet this girl. She's a host and works at E and some other stuff. And she becomes just enamored with talking with me. She said to me, she goes, you're like a diamond lost in the beach here in Jacksonville. She tells me it's a concept for a show called Zootopia, where she goes around to zoos around the world. I created a character named Takahini Tom, which is footage of comedians have found and mocked me with that as well. And I had Takahini Tom, and I created, and he was kind of a mock of Steve Irwin. He stole my Takahini Tom, and he was like crazy and zany. But unbelievably, we sold the show to New Waves. New Waves, which is now bigger now, but 2001, their main thing was they did all the trailers for DreamWorks, which I think is what sustained them.
Yeah.
And then they were beginning to get into other things, you know? So they bought it. I moved out here to L.A. I don't know. I've been working in nightclubs all these years. I don't know what to do with myself. One time, back in about 98, I was staying here in the Hyatt in West Hollywood. My girlfriend says to me, she goes, if you ever work here, you should work down there at the Comedy Store. I go, why? She goes, you like to blab. So I made a list of all the comedy clubs, the Laugh Factory, the Improv, the Ha Ha, all of them. I called them. Believe it or not, the Comedy Store was the only place that was friendly on the phone about coming by and applying. The two people I talked to, which are now successful comedians, Freddie Lockhart and Steve Simone. And they told me
Steve Simone?
Yeah, they were on the phone. And I came by and I talked to them, and they told the manager to go ahead and that they should bring me in because I was like a cartoon.
Yeah. Who was the manager at that time?
A guy named Rob Rothman. And Rob Rothman always came by all the years later and always said, like, I was his great discovery because he had hired me.
You know? Yeah.
But I came in, I did a phone interview for him because I've been working in nightclubs all those years.
Oh, yeah.
He said, that's the best phone interview I've ever heard. I went in and I started working there, and I just did the phone for him. I did the phone. But I have a salesman. Sales is the family trade. Okay, sales is the family trade, so it's like I get into it. I get more into selling people coming out than selling a car. I'm like always been in selling an event. That's why I did well at the T-Birds Club. So I increased their sales like a certain percentage in a month. So one day I come walking in, and there she is, a legendary Mitzi Shore. And I go, hey, Mitzi, I'm Tommy. And she looks up at me, and she goes, oh, my God. She goes, you're cute. And then the next thing, I started driving around to some doctor's appointments, and I got involved in the Comedy Store. So understand that I got involved in the Comedy Store by way of not knowing I was going to get involved with it the way that I did. It was like a
totally unplanned.
Kind of a magical occurrence.
Yeah, totally unplanned.
How old was Mitzi when this happened?
71.
Wow.
She wasn't driving, but she was still walking around.
Yeah.
And she ran it. I worked there the last year she ran it alone.
Yeah.
So she ran it alone my first year, and then Peter and Polly came in and started overseeing things in like October 2002. And they didn't, you know, Mitzi's a kind of person, she creates a lot of fear in people. She just always did. Intimidation fear.
Yeah.
And it's just even her own kids and everybody, they were afraid to try to change anything in there without talking to her.
Why do you think
they
that is?
They didn't come over and change everything. There's a long process to making it in.
Why do you think that is? Because you were telling about that she's like a mother. And
it's like...
strong.
You're lucky if you meet a human being like her once in your life. She's something I call the great individual, one of a kind. Didn't even talk like other people.
Yeah.
But by the time I'd met her, had been through so much that she was leery of the sale act and people just trying to be, couldn't manipulate her.
Yeah.
It was impossible. But it's not that she was mean about it, it's that she just watched you. The woman, a few words, but the words that she said had great impact. And I just became enamored with working for her and the legend of her. It's still to me, and I don't mean to go on to talk about it, but it's still to me, I wish more people knew about her. I wish, you know, that one book tells about her a little bit. You know, I'm dying up here or whatever. But
I read that book.
But she's something else. She changed the whole dynamic of comedy.
Yeah.
Because an actual artist, like a Clive Owen or these, who's the guy that did Motown, real artists. When they get into this position, they change everything.
Yeah, the landscape changes, and you were part of that, and that's an amazing thing.
Well, I think the cool thing is that, like, this lady took you in and trained you, and then in just 1 year, you were, like, you took everything.
It wasn't about training. I wouldn't even say she trained me. I know people would think that, because I definitely wanted to elevate that. She just saw what I was.
Yeah.
I came in, I was... I made her laugh going to doctor's appointments, and I'm also respectful. We had talked about this before the broadcast began.
Yeah.
It's still your mothering. My mother was – she detested crude men. She really wanted her sons to be respectful of women.
Yeah.
And so she programmed it in. And so Mitzi felt that energy, and that creates comfort.
Yeah.
In other words, you know what I mean? She didn't feel – and not that I was going to – but I'm just so respectful. So I opened the door, make her laugh, be quiet when you should be quiet.
Yeah.
And she's a moody lady. Moody.
Yeah.
You know, and she says almost a nasty thing to you. But if you're one of those people you're like,
sure.
And you let it roll off, then you can hang out with her.
Yeah.
You'd be Mr. Offended and just leave. Yeah. Because that's the way that was. And so our relationship was a friendship. It was a friendship. And she came in to do showcases, and I had the lights. Who put the lights like this at all? I just tried to make it look nice for you. She goes, it does look nice. She noticed that I said to her, she said to me, she goes, I heard you managed a club in Florida. I said, well, why don't you be the manager? And I said, well, I don't think your club needs help like that. It needs help ground level.
Yeah.
She goes, what do you mean? I said, it needs like the door, the phone, greeting people, talking to them. There needs to be a reconnection with the local people.
Yeah.
I said, my mother always told me it's the little things in life that make a difference. And man, that's when she looked at me. She said, your mother taught you that? And I went, yeah. She goes, you were raised by a wise woman. I said, I don't know if she's as wise as you, Mitzi. And she giggled. But the path to wisdom is a different path.
Yeah.
And that's why I am an unusual anomaly in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Okay? I have been offered some interesting stuff because of things that I did, but I felt more purposeful at the store. And to be honest with you, as I found out, I think a lot of the things that people are thinking about me has already passed by. because that was at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went ahead and defined myself as no Facebook, you can't find me artist. And they were like, well, you know, we thought we might be interested in him, but he's too much like that. We need people that are going to kiss our ass.
It's interesting how you say you don't have a Facebook or a Twitter, because I had to go through like four people just to contact you, you know.
I have a phone number.
Yeah.
I might go into those things if my life evolves into something different. There's a little bit of interest around me. I know that I'm controversial. The thing you'll find the most in conversations about me is that people will put me down and be negative on me. When you go over and you find out what they're about, they're usually not the most talented people. There are some people that will speak negatively about me that are really talented, but they're still not they still got something from me.
Yeah.
I've had people that have been very cruel to me and said nasty things to me, but I always let it roll off. And I always just say it's because I'm not gay. You know? I don't get offended. Go, well, we'll just see now. We'll see what happens now. And I'm just like, whatever. I let it roll off.
Very different Tommy.
Well, one of the things I couldn't feel like I did, which Mitzi did do, is I couldn't hug everybody. If I was gay, I could.
Yeah.
You could hug everybody. Like, what? I just didn't think it was the right thing to do.
I never felt.
And then with girls, with all these young girls working out and stuff like that, I thought it wouldn't be right in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought there should always be a thing where there's that space of their comfort. If they want to give me a good set, but in let the friendship build.
Sure.
I never wanted any, and not that it would, but I didn't want any girl to ever think that they were going to get an opportunity there or not get an opportunity based on something about that kind of energy that can happen between men and women. I try to get that off.
Well, your honesty about talent and telling comics where they're at, I can see that would not fit in at all. You told us.
Yeah, to finish like what it was with Mitzi. So I work for her. I'm helping get things set up. She says to me, she goes one day, she goes, you should be a comedian. She goes, I'll think you'd give it a nice twist. That is a quote.
Nice.
And I said, Mitzi, I know I have the skill set to do it. The problem is I've been noticing while I've been working for you these past 3 months or so that people that want to do it are obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And she goes right away, she goes, that's true. And I went, I'll never be obsessed with being a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
I'll do it. I'll host something. But I'd love to play my guitar and sing too, and not a parody. Mm-hmm. Like to be really, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So I said, but I am becoming very intrigued with you, which I was. Yeah. Becoming very intrigued with you. And so she said to me, she goes, well, you know something? She goes, you're the first human being that I've met that I feel could do my work as well. She goes, because you have to be a very talented person yourself in order to see talent. And so that's when I kind of began my journey into looking at comics. This is before I was a talent coordinator. This is another 2 years goes by while I'm still just – but she liked – I started sitting next to her during the showcases.
Yeah.
I started seeing what she liked. I started seeing what I liked, you know.
It's funny that you mentioned what you liked. Like, what was something that you liked? Like, what comic really – like, not – you don't even have to name names. Just, like, a style.
One of the things Mitzi picked this group of people, which I did not say – I can't say I specifically picked when you go down a list – but what I did when I came in is I started scheduling them, like really pumping it. Now, she didn't want me, she was doing the lineups alongside me, and she didn't want me to change anything, but I started making some small changes, and she didn't say anything too much.
Yeah.
We did have a moment where I knew everything was going to change in about 2006, and that is she came in for a main room show, and I didn't know she was coming in, and I had made some changes. And Steve Byrne, who's pretty successful, he's on Sullivan and Son. Argus was out of town. He always goes second at 9:15, and I forgot he was out of town.
Argus Hamilton.
So I stuck Steve Byrne at 9:15.
Oh. Yeah.
And he did unbelievable, and it's so great at work, but she came in and knew that was not what she did.
Yeah.
And so when I –
Well, Steve Byrne, he wasn't on Sullivan & Son back then.
No. Yeah. I'm talking about this is when he was developing. This is 2006.
Yeah.
What Steve did is he came from New York, and he'd been doing comedy a long time, but he spent a good 2.5-3 years – getting scheduled heavy in the OR, which changes you.
Yeah.
It makes you more human. And then that prepares you more for television.
Yeah.
It's an intimate room. Stand-up comedy is an intimate conversation with a crowd. So you work out in small rooms, and then you go do a 5,000-seater, and you work the same way, they'll listen to you.
Sure, that's a great
You don't want to be a screamer like this.
No.
Yeah.
Look at Larry the Cable Guy. Look at these guys. They don't scream at their audiences. They're having it because they know to keep it honed.
Yeah.
But point being was with Mitzi, as I was driving her, she asked me to, her assistant told the guy that's like her home care guy, he said, you know, she wants you to drive her home. So I drove her home and she said to me, she goes, did you change anything to my lineups tonight? And before I, she goes, before you think very carefully before you utter your next word.
Oh, man. She'd say it like that?
Yeah, which meant don't lie to me. And so I said, I did. I didn't add anybody, but I changed the order. And she goes, why did you do that? I said, because I'm there every night, and I had something change, and I thought it would work well. And I thought she was going to fire me because she notoriously fired everybody, which is, to be honest with you, it's a miracle I worked there that long because Mitzi just, even since she left, she still fired people. It's just what she did. Mm-hmm. She says to me, she goes, well, you might just have a gift. She goes, I have so much I'd like to teach you, and I'm tired, and I don't feel well. I said, Mitzi, I do. I want to learn. I want to learn. She said to me, she goes, we've said this before. God sent you to me. I'm sure of it now. And so I started doing the thing where I started doing the lineups. And point being is that from that point on, she wasn't telling me where to put them. She sat in the chair. She put her glasses on. She looked at it. And why don't you just switch this one to this one? But I started doing it.
Yeah.
And I started moving things around. So Joe Rogan, who's back at the Comedy Store right now, but if he remembers, and he doesn't feel real highly about me, I guess not. I don't know. But point being is that I put Ari Shaffir and Joey Diaz.
Yeah.
And Brett Ernst and all these people around him. I changed what started happening around him my first 2 years. I started taking that Joe Rogan packed OR and not pulling these decisions. Mitzi was coming up. Like it's not that she wasn't still a genius, it's that she just wasn't in touch anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Was Joe Rogan doing Fear Factor during this time?
Yeah, he was on there then. Yeah. He was the place wasn't doing that great, but every Friday and Saturday night in the OR when Joe Rogan was sold out.
Wow.
I've never seen it bad. Yeah. I saw it get slow, but I saw us make it busier. And the last move in the last year and a half has been social media. We did some, but we went double fold into every venue using the younger guys. I mean, it's programmed into your brain.
Sure. Yeah.
Once we started using the younger guys, then the place really started popping. And what I was trying to do, and I did, is you get these people to come in. Well, what? That's just one thing to get them to come in.
Yeah.
You got to give them something.
You got to give them something.
And I gave them something, which was my theme of my time there, innovative comedy.
Yeah.
Innovative comedy, man. Let's see what's going to happen next. Where are we standing? We're in L.A. We're not in Joe's chicken shack in the middle of nowhere.
Thank you. Thank you.
So we're not just going to sit here and be like, oh, you're going to sit because you're some guy that's been on the road 18 years and never did anything with your life. No. That's where I come off like, whoa. I have guys call me up, well, hi, I'm Joe Schmo. Been on the road for 23 years, and I wanted to come off the road and just come into the Comedy Store. How do I start working out there? And I was never mean. I'd be like, because the store's not – I'd be like, hey, you know, you come by, you can work out. And this is like – isn't just like the place. This is me.
Yeah.
And they know that because these things don't happen there anymore.
Yeah.
You just talk to the talent guy there. Now Adam is an industry-savvy guy who has a smartphone and a Facebook page and everything that you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With me, it was like, you seem to be a hard guy to find. I'm like – you could walk up the stairs here five nights a week, and I'm standing here, you know. But whatever. But I don't want to just do that thing. They can work out an open mic. They can do this and that, but they're not going to come in and start becoming paid regulars there. No way.
No, but I love it because it was very personalized, and you told them the situation without.
Here's something that she pointed out to me, and it's the truth about me. She said there is a difference between you and me. She goes, you are a performer. She goes, I'm not. She goes, I wasted some of my time on writers. She goes, I'm not mad they became writers, but if I'd known that's all they wanted to do, I wouldn't have given them as much stage time. She goes, since you're a performer, maybe you can look more for performers.
Yeah.
She goes, with you, while you're here working for me, it's going to be takes one to know one.
Nice.
And that's why you're seeing Whitney and Chris D'Elia and Eliza Schlesinger and Gerard Carmichael and Andrew Santino and Theo Vaughn and Brent Morin. They are all performers.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah, you were telling us that's great. And you delineated that and stood by it.
Oh, yeah. Fahim Anwar, Jesus Trejo.
Trejo.
Francisco Ramos. These are all people that I nurtured in. It's not that comics – I'm a person that's just like the only one that sees it. I always have been not set in vanity. I always tap out and feel out what's feeling out. You know, I would say to comics all the time, and I still will now. I'm like, you know, if you're doing all right, I said, not only will you know, but the comics will let you know.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are they're honest with each other. You know?
I have a question. Did you ever see a comedian just like with the audience just kill, and then you just said, "He's in this, he or she just doesn't have what it takes"? Like in your mind?
No. First of all, that word "kill" I don't use with any level except for Bill Burr.
Bill Burr.
Okay. Chris Rock. You know, John Caparulo, Sebastian Maniscalco, Al Madrigal. These people
Pauly
kill.
Shore.
Pauly knows how to kill.
Yeah.
He knows how to, and then he's so confident and so relaxed in what he is that he doesn't always want to or feel he has to. Pauly and Dave Chappelle are the two most relaxed people I've ever seen on stage, period.
And that's a quote.
Wow, there we go.
They are both really relaxed.
It's funny that, speaking of Pauly, you were on his TV show where you were like the main... I wouldn't say like the main guy, but you were in it quite a bit.
I was supposed to be kind of the foil.
Yeah, for minding the store.
Yeah, it was a great experience. It was cool. I would have loved to have seen it go on and on and on. You know,
they had this thing that like if you didn't laugh, you write them and they send you a dollar. Do you remember that?
No.
I
just remember that more than even the show, the advertising budget was large.
Yeah.
That I was recognized by people that have seen me in my life. Over that, and because of this sordid, my sordid youth,
yeah.
Like such as emceeing male dance reviews, which I did for like 10 years between 22 and 32, I had all kinds of people try to, you know, reach out and be like, oh my God, that's that guy. You know?
Yeah.
And Facebook and all that was, I don't even think that was there yet.
No, they just maybe MySpace.
Messages at the store sure. and yeah, all that. It was like a whole crazy thing. So point being is that, that almost got me. And then another thing, too, which is one of the reasons I'm probably done, is I get a phone call from a friend of mine I went to college with, and he goes, I'm sitting in Times Square looking up at you on a billboard. He goes, when did you even move to California? So I've been on a billboard in Times Square with Pauly and everything from Minding the Storm.
That's awesome.
And so Yeah. Some people have whole careers and never run a billboard.
Yeah.
So I think I already peaked.
That's cool.
That's why it's. God. That's why I really don't know what's next for me. Okay, that's the truth.
So it's funny because you're like a live a day every day how you live it type of guy. You know what I mean? Mm.
Like, I lived it at the store for so long. That's why I had a little bit of emotional withdrawal. We had just talked about this before. It's not about what anybody wants to make it out like. It's some big Tommy got canned at the store. It's not about that. It's about a change of the guard.
Yeah.
That's really more what it is. Yeah. And it's Pauly's time now. He has the gift. He's Mitzi's son. Mitzi's in all of her children, but a very important part is in Pauly. And then the depth of her intelligence is in Peter. And they are the ones that run the comedy store.
Yeah.
And Pauly's just as intelligent, too, but he's an artist. It's a different type of a sensibility.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when Pauly's not focusing on himself and he's looking out at talent, he knows who has it and who doesn't. So he's going to pick all the right people. This is the way it's supposed to be. This is the way it's supposed to be. This is Pauly Smith's East Shore son.
Yeah.
They own it. He picks the paid regulars. I was there to build a bridge from what it was to what it was going to be. And it took a long time, and I love Mitzi and I respect her, and that's why I did it. And that's why I was there. I just find myself, as you guys interview me, and one of the reasons I didn't mind coming and talking about this tonight at all, is I'm just not sure if this skill that I feel I have of comedic development, which is an actual skill, is something that should not be used anymore.
Why?
It'll change the community of comedy. It just will. It's not about the place that has that. It's about the person that knows how to do it.
Yeah, and you clearly know how to do it.
I know how to do it. I know how to pick it. And it's you're not, you know, I'm not down on people. I'm not do or die. But there are some important things. One of the things that she did with me is she didn't teach me things per se, like say this, is that if I said something myself, then she validated me. And this was an important one. I said to her, I'm starting to come to the conclusion that the look is important. She goes, the look is everything. She goes, and remind you. I didn't say they have to be good looking. She goes, that's nice. She goes, but the look, some sort of look. She goes, that's what defines that they're a comedian. If they don't have a look, you know what they are? They're a writer.
Really? That's
she said
I have
that?
To I have wow. to use wow. You're taking my lines away from me. Honestly, Tommy, wow.
Yeah, well, that's why what do you think I stay there so long for? She would say these things. I would look at her, and I would always think in my mind, who are you, lady? Where are you from? Did they drop you off of the spaceship? Nobody talks like this. Unbelievable. But then I just became onto my own thing. She said some very important things to me, and I'll tell you that define me. She said this to me one time. I said, I don't know why I don't leave the store, nothing against you, and go out and try to get in the industry and become rich and buy my house and all this other stuff. She goes, you're an artist. You're the real thing. She goes, you care more about what you do than what you have. And I was like, I was sitting there like befounded. We were eating dinner, and she had a fork in her hand. She turned around and she looks at me. She goes, you never heard that about yourself before, huh? I said, I've never heard it put like that. She goes, you're going to begin to feel a lot better now. And I have.
Yeah.
Because now I realize that it isn't about what I obtain.
Uh-huh.
It's about the impact I have, which I do feel I did achieve during my time at the store, is I got to leave an impact on people. I swear to you, I don't have as much as everyone should have in their life. I just don't. But I have gotten probably, in my time between the T-Birds Club in Florida and the Comedy Store, 1,000 cards from people thanking me for talking to them and giving them, like, the time of a feeling. Now, here's the thing to go into about that. Talk about comedic development, the skill, which we have to talk about. How is it? What is it done? There is a thing that works to it.
Yeah.
And I think I was kind of doing it a little bit, but I did get
I'm very curious about
I did
this.
Get a lesson.
Yeah.
And this is what Mitzi Shore said to me. She goes, first thing to know is don't tell them what to say and don't tell them what to do. She goes, but if you have a feeling that comes to you the moment you're watching them, a thought that you think might be helpful, she goes, go and tell them when they're done their set immediately. She goes, most of the time, it'll be beneficial to them. She goes, and you know what else is interesting? Is that later sometimes, a month or so later, maybe even longer, they'll come back to you and they'll say, thank you so much for what you said to me that time. It really helped me. She goes, and you won't even remember what you said.
Yeah.
Because that's the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
I did. It happened to me this last week at Charlie's house.
That's your new...
Well, that's a place I'm helping book right now. But the week before, I said something to some kid at the end. It was just an open mic night. But something came to my mind. I went over and talked to him. And he came back over this last week and he talked to me. He goes, I think you've changed everything for me. Because I told him, I said, you're stuck. I said, you're stuck.
Yeah.
And I told him some stuff and he said it helped him. So it does really actually work. Because it's how about this? It's not like a lesson book.
No.
It's a feeling that is pertaining to the actual human being you're looking at. It's individual.
It's so intuitive, and it's just there.
And sometimes it's not about saying a specific thing.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like stop defeating yourself. You're doing this. And then there's the basic things, which I've been talked to a little bit about doing some seminars. I've been talked to about a couple different things. I don't know if I want to do that. I don't know.
Well, you said you got talked to writing a book, but you...
No, I'm not going to... No, people had always said I should do that. Yeah. I don't know about that. I don't know. Like I said, this Comedy Store in Mitzi is the Shore family story. That's the God's honest truth. It's not my story. I am just a chapter in that place, okay? It's been open 72 to 2014. I was there 2001 to 2014. Okay, I've helped with the last part of like this next getting ready for something else, but the place is bigger than me. I always said the place was bigger than me. Yeah. I always talked like I wasn't going to be there forever. Not that I didn't think I probably would have stayed there forever, but I don't know. Maybe there's something else for me to do.
How long were you thinking, like when you first got the job, were you thinking, oh, how long am I going to be here?
No, I didn't think that way. I live in the moment.
Yeah.
Mitzi knows that about me. I think as far as the next day. I'm not a big planner.
Yeah.
But it helps you live in the moment. One of the reasons I think I had an effect with what I was doing is I lived it. There's not a day off. The phone's on all the time. Every day, every week, every month, every year. I lived it.
Even Christmas?
Every Christmas Day. I work Christmas night.
You were there all year long.
Yeah, I stopped working some of those holidays this last year or so because this isn't a true observation too. I was getting burnt out a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not that I still couldn't give good advice, but I was tired.
A little fatigued.
Been working until 3 a.m. since I was 22 and I'm 52.
Yeah.
It gets to be something where you're just like, you know. And then you know that all the other people your age are home, in their homes, with their kids, in their lives. And I just have one person I'm with, and we have our dog, and I live in an apartment.
Yeah.
So there was a big sacrifice to do what I've done, because I didn't obtain during the normal age period things that people do, the checklist of life. And I'm not saying that I'm not trying to blame anything, but that's what you get if you live, eat, and breathe something like what I did.
Yeah,
you became the art.
I put so much into it. I put my heart into it. Only certain people will know what that is. I knew in 2009 or something, maybe 2008. She came in and I came up and kneeled by her, and she said to me, she goes, "It feels so good in here right now." And I went, "Thanks." You know, I said, "I'm glad, Mitzi." And then she said to me, she goes, "Thank you." She actually recognized that I had changed and healed the energy inside the place. It's healthy for nurturing. And it's still there now.
Yeah.
So I'm not, there's no negative to come from me. The store is beautiful. And let it perpetuate now because it's healthy. No. And it's got the people I found, the people that Mitzi found, the legendary people that come by. There's enough talent in that place to make it explode forever. You know, so I believe me, it's all kudos. But the thing I did is I lined it up.
Yeah.
I got it lined up.
Lined up.
And now is one of the things is we get not just the Comedy Store, but we go over to talking about even Charlie's house. You know, Vaucluse, I mean, the lounge, that's really what it's called. But it was Charlie Chaplin's house.
Wait, really? There's like real house?
Yeah, he lived there. That was Charlie Chaplin's house.
That's
why it's called Charlie's house.
You know,
no, they're calling it Charlie's house, but you just see what it's written on the outside. Let's talk, you know, what it really is. It says Vaucluse Lounge. It's owned by some people, and they do all kinds of events.
Well, no, because we were going to go Monday,
Tommy,
but we couldn't find it.
We were looking at it, and I came across Charlie's house. I went, "Wow, Charlie Chaplin's house." I was just Googling. I went, "Wow, that's really cool."
If we knew that was this place,
the history of buildings,
we would have went in.
So he's just told us.
Vaucluse Lounge is Charlie Chaplin's house.
Charlie Chaplin's home. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he had many, but he had one right there, which was smart because he was, you know, right in the center of making the whole movie thing happen. And West Hollywood has always been the brains of Hollywood.
Let's
give it a compliment. You know, it's a clean, I used to say to people too, I go, you know, it has a large gay community, which is great. I said, but one of the things that large gay community does is they're like, we want it safe and we want it clean. And it is.
Yeah.
It is.
That is so interesting. We were trying to find it on Monday, but we couldn't.
No, we couldn't. We
were like,
Vaucluse Lounge. It's the thing that the owners there, Brad and Claire, have done is they've made a very eclectic vibe.
Yeah.
Now, nice, they're interested in doing that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Not to go like on a long thing, but so I stopped working at the Comedy Store at the end of July. Yeah. I was around about a month, and then I decided to leave. I went to my older brother lives on an island called Roatan off of Honduras. Mm-hmm. I went down there, stayed with him 2 months, took a break, played guitar, sang, thought. Decided to come back, and when I got back here, I was contacted about would I be interested in helping schedule that show.
Yeah.
And people have asked me already. They're like, "So how did you come to be doing this here?" I go, "I was asked."
Yeah,
here you go.
It's all you have to do with me. You just have to ask.
Yeah. We even asked.
That's what
you guys asked.
Yeah.
I don't mind.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind. I don't.
Well, see, the thing with asking is, like, the thing that I was always taught is you just got to keep asking, because what's the worst they're going to say? No?
It doesn't get worse than no.
Yeah. It's like.
Well, no is. I think when we come here to Hollywood, we're going to have to hear no, and we have to learn how to get past it.
Ooh, yeah, exactly. No. You got
to
make
I tell people, turns. I talk to comics a lot about. Things outside of their stage work that they have to think about. And one is you want to be tenacious, but you don't want to be annoying, because I've seen people do both.
Yeah.
So I point out to a young comic, I go, "I just want you to know that I know you think you're being tenacious, but you're being annoying." So stop being annoying.
That's actually great advice, though.
That's very good.
Because if you want to, you know, keep getting spots or whatever, just be like, "Look, I know what you could do. You're, you know, call once a month."
But these self-help book things, you know, all these things where people are getting all these ideas it's just all stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought they showed you the perfect mockery in that Magnolia movie with Tom Cruise playing the guru guy. Never to, you know, it's like, and he, you know, he's there crying over his father later.
That.
It just
I love
shows
that.
You.
I love
just
that.
Just shows
That's
you.
That's a great scene.
Yeah, but comedians, the stand-up comedy is an art form. It's a new art form. It hasn't been around that long. I mean, there was people telling jokes and stuff like that, but I'm talking amplification with a microphone and a PA system.
No,
so you're talking less than 100 years.
No.
One of the things I like to point out to people is that there's people have been using humor throughout all of time. Plato was funny. Plato got people to laugh so they would listen to him. Mm-hmm. Abraham Lincoln was funny. Mm-hmm. So these people can talk about serious things with humor. So stand-up comedy is one of the last arenas of free speech. It's one of the last places where people can say anything they want, almost. I mean, people have been saying certain words.
Yeah, especially lately. Trouble.
Well, like, it's because you got people now being able to stand up and say you shouldn't be doing this. Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. The N-word, which is a big one, is okay because it was used in such a derogatory fashion for so long at African-American people that they should be allowed to only be able to use it among themselves or not have anyone else say it. Oh. And I think they just deserve that. No one should even try to fight that. And I saw comics try to say, oh, I can still say that, and then they got talked to and they can't.
Now, what about the R-word? Do you feel the same thing about the R word?
I'm trying to forget what's the R word.
What's your R word?
It's the retard.
I don't know.
No,
I don't understand. You know, I'd have to be the context. I don't want you to.
Because the thing is, I have autism. I have this thing called Asperger's syndrome. So whenever comedians say the R word, I take huge offense to it. It's like,
How about this? I don't even know why they would need to say that word.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Like, why do you have to rely on that word?
No, I don't think they do. Just remember, you're going to stand in the entire arena of comedy. You're not just going to see headliners and know what's going on.
Yeah, but see,
you're going
to
see
people don't even need to see say the N word. You could just.
Nah, you're still going to be someone's going to try. Well, they do.
Yeah.
Okay, African American comics do.
That's what
they
I'm
say
saying.
It every. But it's there. But I'm just saying that they can have that word. That they can use it any way
because
they want.
Because they own
it's
it.
Just it's better than trying to make a debate about it.
Yeah.
It's just
no problem.
You have that. You got that right.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some mistreatment there for a long time. The only thing I ever say, which I don't like, is that it wasn't me. You know what I mean? So don't get mad at me. All right.
Now I have a question. When you were talking about changing the guard, did you know? Like the guard was about to be changed. Like,
I got a feeling.
You had a feeling.
I just kind of felt like, you know, it's like I it's Groundhog Day for me.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't.
That was a great movie.
It is, but it's just like it's perpetuating.
Yeah.
It's one, but you know, ultimately, I was in a powerful position, and just like the Uncle says in the Spider-Man movie, you have to be responsible with power. You have to be responsible.
Great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, I felt like I was. I didn't abuse it or anything like that. If anything like that, I tried to be more explaining. I'd take the time to talk to anybody. People wanted to come up and really ask me. The only thing that I got a little bit of a reputation for, and I'll keep till as long as I go, is that if you want to actually engage me that way, if you want to have a conversation, and you're going to take no for an answer, even though I may have already said something to you, then we're going to have a conversation, and I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And you can say anything you want to me. It ain't going to bother me.
Yeah.
I've had people trying to say stuff about me and my face and my back my whole life because I naturally am a lot of things that they're not, and that's what they do to people like me. I'm just kidding. I'm not kidding you. So if they're going to go so far as you be like you say to them, I already told you what's going on with you need to work on. They still, some of them are real insistent because they're on this big rush to get famous or be validated.
Yeah.
And they come up and they go, you're just not seeing this and that. I have an honest conversation. And it's mean, but not brutal and not cussing, but it's honest.
Yeah.
And I tell them, you know, and the center of what I'm telling them is, it's not happening. You know? And that's it. But those kind of conversations, that's why I've gotten a lot of hatred stuff. There'll be specific people that might even say really negative about me, but then if I was asked after they said the negative thing, I could still point out that I had a conversation with them at some point where they were thanking me for everything I'd done for them. But they only had it alone.
That's a good point.
With me. And they didn't want anyone else to hear it.
Yeah, well, the honest part, they don't want to hear the honesty, man.
No, they do. They do. But I mean, it's the only way they can get better.
Yeah. I don't think people want to hear brutal honest.
No, not brutal, but they don't want
to
hear.
You don't have to be brutally honest with people like to be mean, like the Simon dude was on American Idol and stuff. Like, you don't have to be like that.
No,
but I'm saying engage. Point being is that if they don't take no for an answer, if they want to get down to like you're wrong, you're not seeing what I'm seeing, then you tell them the honest truth.
Yeah.
And when I mean the honest truth, it's not like I'm never about tearing down human beings as human beings.
That's
the part I don't like.
That's the point.
Yeah.
I have seen that done by comics, too. I've seen them tear human beings down completely
please.
As human beings and then try to validate themselves and think they're nice people by buying drinks or do this and that. And it's just not nice. You don't need to tear human beings down that far.
Yeah.
But another thing, too, I want to say is that if somebody ever goes to a show somewhere and they're stupid enough to take on a comic, well, maybe you just might deserve it. Don't take on comics, idiot.
Thank you. Thank you, Tommy.
What's wrong with you?
I think that's...
You're not at the office there, honey. Jeezy peasy.
That is a strong truth, sir.
Come on. Yeah, but come on.
Yeah, really, you know, really.
A question that I had is, has a, you know, you talk about the input and stuff. Has a comic ever, and you know, don't say names, but has a comic ever taken your input a little too personally and maybe wanted to do violence towards you?
Well, not my input, no.
No.
Just whether they're getting spots or not. Yeah, I've been thrown against the wall. Mm-hmm. I've had fingers pointed in my chest where I got bruises. I've been spit at. I've had a couple things like that.
Pauly Shore doesn't count.
No, Pauly never treated me like that. Honestly, I was only treated by with respect by him.
Yeah.
You know, he went through a little phase in where he wasn't sure. He wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to be able to interfere with his time. But I worked alongside with him and in a conjunction between times in a way that I think he found good so he could work on his own things. And he's going to continue to work on his own things. But I still say the same thing. It was inevitability that Pauly would be the person that picks the paid regulars at the Comedy Store.
Yeah,
that's the way it should be. What I have come out with is this is a ability that I did not think I was going to have, which is actual comedic development. And what I would like to see of myself is somewhere to be able to do that. And right now, it's not that it's a big thing, but we're going to encourage people at the Vaucluse Lounge, Charlie's House as it's called, when we do the comedy on Mondays, that we're going to do a typical Evolution of Comedy night. So at 7 to 7:30, I get to show people what I am, which a lot of people knew there but didn't see. I play guitar and I sing. So the first half hour, I'm the opening act. And at 7:30 to 8, they're going to be open micers. We'll have five of them to get on, maybe a couple more. And I'm going to be there watching. And then we're going to schedule some intermediate-level people that will go up till, you know, from 8 to 9. And I'll watch them, too.
Okay.
And I'll be doing what I do, which I do. Is if I feel something, I'll tell them. If I don't feel anything, I'm not going to say anything.
Okay.
But if I feel it, I'll tell them some stuff. Now, for comics to be able to come and get up during that time, be able to have someone with my experience and the way that I know how to work, be able to help them with any comments and stuff, that's worth it.
Yeah.
Because comics trying to tell the comics what to do is not always that good. It's a weird thing. It's called unsolicited advice a lot.
Yeah. I agree with that statement.
That's why I like even there.
I can't give Tommy a bigger thank you on that one.
No, that doesn't work. Because that's why even like there's the podcast where comics tell other comics what they think. It's like, it's okay, it's entertaining, but they're really not the right people because they have a tendency to be comparative. This is why I go back to the point of once I told Mitzi Shore that I was not going to be a comic, that's why she pointed out that I could do what she's doing because by not being a comic, I can remain objective. I can see you for what you are, not the person I think you should be because I already perform and this works for me. But I tell you what I do though, is I do give small performance tips, which Mitzi watched me do, and she said she had never done, and she really liked things like pull the mic down at him from your face, stop pacing, slow down. Those are general things I tell anybody, but the funny thing is they don't actually ever hear it. They might have been already going up 2 years. No one ever said it to them.
Yeah.
It's the thing I like about comics is they're, by and large, intelligent enough that all they need is somebody to point that out, and then it changes. And then they start that one little extra thing.
Thank you.
I mean, it's nice to see be helpful to them. You know, it's one of the things that it's like, why don't I just go teach a comedy class somewhere?
That's what I was going
to
think.
Yeah, but it's like that's back to the thing. It's like the stuff I want to say to people, maybe it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
It's just for the people that deserve to hear it.
Now,
sounds like a weird thing.
No.
Now, a question about Charlie's. Are you like training people to be like paid regulars over
there? No, we're going to have headliners we're going to schedule after 9 o'clock, you know, regular headliners, a mixture of people from the entire Los Angeles area that are comics. We're going to get line up. I'm just going to put the lineup together. I think, you know, I think we have like Jeff Garland coming this next week. We have some people that are, you know, okay. Yeah. Steve Simone and Jimmy Schubert have already done it. And, you know, Jesus Trejo was there last week. So they're just, it's just a workout spot. We're not a big comedy club. But we just want to get a vibe going in there with stand-up.
Yeah.
That, yet, you know, the people, of course, are going to be entertained after 9 with shorter sets than a regular comedy club on a Monday night. But the early part is about getting an opportunity to be seen by someone who can actually say something.
That's
to
the evolutionary
part. And that's just like taking a skill I have and just wanting to use it. And believe me, it's not about taking anything away from anywhere. It's about just adding something into the community. You might hear something, you might not.
Now, if the Monday nights keep being successful, is there any chance you're going to want to do it Tuesdays, or do you think just
I think the owners are open to things. They're already were a little bit excited, but I really put my voice in there that I want to let this build first before you start spreading out.
Yeah.
We actually got a really good time of year right now to build something, which is between now and Christmas. Hollywood and the industry have gone night and away, and they're on an island somewhere on vacation. So this is the perfect time to work on something artistically and nurture
December,
it.
January.
There's been a lot of excitement around it because of there's people thinking about all kinds of ideas with it, and I don't want to like jinx anything, but like I'm surprised, like, you know, and there's all kinds of stuff that's possible there, but I'm always like first things first, let's just make it open successfully at the right time, and the show starts at the right time, and good people later, and is the waitresses that they didn't get good enough service? I mean, is the place making money? You got to look out for your place. If you don't look out for the place, they've got to make money. If they don't make money, then you're not helping the place. So I just want to see that happen. It's got an eclectic vibe in there. It's one of the things I liked about it. And there's nothing. Charlie Chaplin is probably one of the greatest entertainers that ever lived, ever. And definitely comedic.
Oh, yeah.
To have some stand up going on in a place that he owned sounds karmically sound.
Cool.
It sounds right.
Very cool.
I mean, it can have many things in there, but that just seems to fit.
That's like beautiful. You know, with the success of that, you know, who knows? Maybe stand up will happen at the Bob Hope Airport.
Because he lives close to that area, but I'm telling you.
Yeah, but no, man. You have any other questions for Tommy?
God, you know, we were talking back here, and I mentioned that Kinison thing. Is there anyone that comes to mind that you want to talk about their style or something that hits you, a little anecdote? I like that one about Kinison, or anything that you want to say, Tommy.
Oh, well, you know, the legend of the place is that's something that can be told by so many comedians. I met so many great people there. That's one of the things that I'll miss about not being there. Is it's one of those type of places so many people have gone in. I'm not even just talking to performers. I remember one time John McEnroe and Patti Smythe came up to the cover, the booth, and they were like, we just left the worst show at the Improv, and we came here, we're only here in L.A. till tomorrow, and we just want to have a laugh. You think you can help us? And I always used to do a thing which I call Play Hollywood. So I took them right from the booth, right over to a booth, in charge. And I went back to the back, got their drinks, and had them on their table all within 2 minutes.
Wow.
I treated them like Hollywood. And another funny story that I like is this girl comes running up the stairs, and she's like, I'm getting ready to bring my dad in. He's kind of really well-known, and I don't want anyone, you know, I don't want anyone to feel funny or anything like that. But it's his first time he's ever been here. And up comes walking the stairs comes Billy Idol. Oh, and here comes Billy Idol. I go, hey, good to see you. And she goes, so this is my dad, and this is his first time here. And I looked at Billy Idol, and I went, this is your first time here? And he looked at me like I might be old enough to. And I said, Billy, there's a picture at Mitzi Shore's house of you kissing her on the side of the face from about 1985. And he goes like this to his daughter, I've been here before. She goes, Dad, why didn't you tell me? He goes, I didn't want to ruin your surprise.
Oh, well, at least that's sweet for him.
I thought it was funny.
And you had to ruin that girl's dreams.
And then, you know, there's some people that love comedy. Toby Keith always coming in, and he stays right at the very end. Dr. Dre all the time.
Yo,
Quentin Tarantino
Dr.
two
Dr.
or three times a year.
Quentin
watches
Tarantino.
Every single person. Yeah. I actually saw Francis Ford Coppola and his wife maybe about 5 months ago, and they came in for a while, and they enjoyed themselves. So the point being is that's always the other interesting part, too, is seeing the people that come in. Because keep in mind, it's not just the Comedy Store. It was Ciro's. It was one of the most legendary nightclubs in the United States.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
You know, and it's very haunted. And
speaking of haunted, that was one question I had.
Go ahead.
Was, you know, there's two stories. Yeah, you know, we only have 5 minutes, so if you could like chim it up a little. But there's two stories of haunted about the Comedy Store. One, the comedian who killed himself. They say that his ghost haunts the store. And then I saw a TV show on like Mystery Detectives, and it said the store is haunted too. And you've been there for 13 years. Did you ever see haunted or feel haunted?
Yeah.
Tell us a
quick like this.
Story.
I tell people when they're there during the night, they're like on, a, you know, come in for the show, and they'll say, "Oh, is the Comedy Store haunted?" I go, "Well, yeah. I mean, it's great now. It feels great. 3 a.m. Creepy. Creepy.
Dark. Very dark.
Like, what's the
scary,
most
scary? No, creepy. No.
What's a haunted experience for me? Like,
cold spots are common.
Really?
You walk through an ice cold bit of air. It's only at the time. You got to understand Wiccan. There's real things.
Yeah.
After 3, like 3:15, that's the time.
No, you know,
that's the time. So you're not always there that late. So that's the reason people don't really see things. But sometimes, like let's say if a Dave Chappelle or someone would show up late, they'd stay on. You don't leave till 4. That's when it happens.
Little weird. Little weird.
It's creepy.
And it's an energy.
I think it had a hold of me. I don't know. It just wanted me to. Yeah, I was going to make me Jack Nicholson in The Shining at the end. You've always been here, you know? But it's kind of the truth.
Oh, man. That would be interesting, Tom.
Well, it's so.
That's funny.
Well, I kind of thought that I was starting to think that might be what happened. But in a sense, too, like I said, I like being a person that.
Well, we're out of time, but anything you want to just Charlie's on Mondays?
Anything you want to tell us? Anything at all? Just
well, yeah, two things. One, I'd like to say that I treasure my time at the Comedy Store and working for Mitzi Shore, and I wish the place nothing but continued success, and I have great affinity for the Shore family. They always took good care of me. And then I want to say that, yes, it's nice to be emerging again a little bit at Charlie's house. I'm going to give my artistic input. People want to come by. I'll be there. And I'd like you to listen to me sing play my guitar, even if you don't even want to see that part of me. But
excellent.
It's who I am, Center.
Well, Keith and I
will be
there.
And thank you for having me, both of you. I appreciate it.
Thank
you.
We do got to get going, but follow us on Facebook. Tommy doesn't have one, but listen to the podcast and see him on Mondays at Charlie's. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Tommy.
You're listening to Razza Riffs with Keith Razza and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.